Hello, I'm Ben Folds. Welcome to Arts Vote 2020. This is a space where we have the opportunity to hear from 2020 presidential candidates on the arts. The arts is something that isn't often included in the mainstream discussion, so we're grateful to our candidates for taking time out of their busy schedules to tell us how they intend to steer this very important national asset. Today, we talk to presidential candidate Congressman Eric Swalwell. We learned that the very first government position that the congressman held after he graduated law school was serving on his hometown's Heritage and Cultural Arts Commission. Congressman Swalwell also tells us how, as president, he would use the national bully pulpit to help showcase America's stories through the art. My podcast homie, coming to us via the internet from the faraway land of Alaska, without whom I'd be lost, is former Senator Mark Begich. For the past 30 years, when I've been out touring and making records, seeing the impact of arts policy in towns across America, it's people like Senator Begich, also former mayor of Anchorage, who have been doing the important work of making sure our arts are represented and funded and that everyone has access. Hello to Alaska.
Yeah, Ben, thank you very much. You know, I'm up here in Alaska. It's, it's not solstice yet. It's the land of the midnight sun. So it's daylight, 24 hours here. Weather's great. Thanks for being here, Congressman. And Ben, I'll flip it back to you, but I'm anxious.
Right on. We are honored to have Congressman Eric Swalwell, and he's running for president, as we all know. He represents Castro Valley in the East Bay. I want to start out with more of a personal take on you and arts, and maybe your past with it, to kind of bring it home to the way that that you personally view arts. You're on the younger side by far of the presidential candidates, and I hate to say that I'm approaching two decades. You're a senior. Which is weird for me. But I grew up in a different era, probably. In my public school, we all were basically handed an instrument if we wanted to play music, for instance. And I think that it's possible that you may have experienced slightly different, and that the generations coming up now, as we know, there's a trajectory which is generally down. What was your experience in school with the arts? And of course, I'm interested in music, but not everyone's a musician. So, yeah, how was it for you in school?
Well, first, thanks for having me on the podcast, and thank you, Senator, as well, for your support of the Americans for the Arts Action Fund. I have to tell you, it's really refreshing to talk about this for two reasons. One, we're on the trail. I mean, there's a lot of issues that it's kind of issues of the day is all you get to talk about, and this is an issue. Like, whether we get it right or not, you'll see its effects in the next generation. But secondly, it's hard for me to even think of art beyond Moana and Cars with a 2-year-old and a 7-month-old. That's like all it's just like on a rerun. Like, I'm now like in this vortex where I'm like convinced Cars is an infrastructure movie and it's telling us that we need to like connect disconnected communities. So I need to like step away from like my children's art and like what they're viewing right now. But for me, I grew up going to public schools, and my parents moved us around a lot. I went to 11 different schools. We lived in 9 different homes, from Iowa to Oregon, up and down California. And I saw that as we got into better and better schools, the programming also was a lot better, and the resources in the schools were a lot better. I didn't benefit from art, I would say, in the way that my younger brothers did, because they were able to take on, instruments, and they were exposed to instruments. By the time I had reached middle school, we were in the best school district we had ever gone to, but my brothers were able to benefit from elementary schools in that city that did expose them, to musical instrument classes. For me, if you're talking about, music, it wasn't until I was in college that, just with a bunch of friends, tried to play the guitar, and that was fun. And I wish I had, picked it up a lot earlier. But there is a real divide in America, especially on art, where a child's exposure is often determined by their zip code.
Exactly, which is kind of comes around to your point about all the schools that you went to and all the different areas you lived in. Similar to my background, I lived in a good 12 houses, before I graduated. Saw a big difference too, even in my era. Unfortunately, there is a big difference between lower income schools, particularly people of color, and their access to the arts, as you probably saw firsthand. Big part of why I'm here doing that really bothers me, especially when you see the data on school dropout rates, how much it's helped by being inspired by arts, being in the school, and how much that does for other facets of your education. It's good for math. It's good for history. Brings things together. Gives kids, especially like me, more confidence. Maybe you, you know, you. Everyone's into a different thing, but the arts will generally bring someone in some way. You know, if you find yourself in the presidency, how do you anticipate steering the conversation? Where do arts sit for you, and how are you going to go about this? You
know, it is a priority for me, not just for children in their classroom, but, you know, I look at a lot of like how I would lead the country through how I led a city where I ultimately landed and grew up when I got on its city council. And that's the city of Dublin, California. Hmm. When my parents moved us there in 1992, you know, that would ultimately be where we landed. And it gave us the best hope, you know, at all of us doing better and their hard work meaning something. But even when we got there, I learned pretty quickly that most of the cities around us called the town Scrublin, just because like it was right smack in the middle of the middle class, and everyone else around us had better paying jobs, more expensive homes, better schools. And I hated that reputation. You know, I played sports, and as you played other towns, you'd hear that as a nickname and kind of carried it as a chip on my shoulder. So I came back home after going to college and law school. I returned to Dublin, and it was a mentor of mine who was a high school teacher who encouraged me not to, after I went to law school in the Washington area, not to stay here, but to come home and help my community. And I thought, okay, you know, I've been an intern in Capitol Hill. I'll come back home. I'll run for city council and get involved. I want to turn around this city's reputation too. And he said, no, you're not going to go on the city council. You're 25. You'll be coming in hot. No one's going to respect that. You'll lose. And I said, okay, well, I'll go on the planning commission. You know, we want to build out the city, have better schools, better jobs. He said, no, the planning commission is also, that's the commission, you know, that you eventually move up to. And I said, well, what should I do? He said, we're going to put you on the Heritage and Cultural Arts Commission. I said, well, what the hell do I know about art? And this mentor said to me, exactly. He said, you're going to, you know, you'll learn about art. You'll learn how it relates to what we do in the city. And as we had development projects in the city, you know, I served on the Arts Commission and then the Planning Commission. I saw the intersection of, you know, development and art, and that, you know, our towns as they developed were empty if we didn't have public art. And if we didn't put a requirement on developers, you know, to have, you know, public art as a part of every project. We built a museum to honor the city's history. And to me, that showed jobs as well, that you could, you know, increase the tourism that a city could have if, you know, you had a museum. We renovated the school. And this was right before I came back home, the high school I'd went to, where a third of us went on to college when I graduated. They renovated the school and they built a performing arts center, something that we never even, you know, had or would think to have when I was growing up there. Today, 98% of the kids go on to college. So this town has really changed. And I would like to believe a lot of it was the, you know, just the smart growth development we did, and that we didn't miss the opportunity to incorporate, whether it was public art in the town square or developments, or making it a priority in the schools with the Performing Arts Center. And as president, I would see as, you know, you have a responsibility for every city in America, especially connecting disconnected cities, that seeing the value of public art for jobs, for education, and for just telling the story of, you know, who you are as a community or as a people or culture.
Right. So really informing people and the public in general that, you know, economic growth and driving the economy with arts is no small thing. Like, you know that from the ground up. I think that your average citizen, because I consider myself that, is not necessarily aware of how much that means. I was looking at this stat here, which just blows me away, that arts and culture in the U.S., that's all the arts, added $804 billion to the economy in 2016, a larger share of the nation's economy, 4.3%, than transportation, tourism, and agriculture. And that's huge. And you would think that you would want a president that would steer such an important force.
And we also see that in California. So expanding beyond just Dublin, California, you know, the arts is the second largest employment sector in California. You know, so you have, you know, tech, biotech is the first. The second is the film industry and all the jobs, you know, not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera. So many you know, people, their livelihood is connected, you know, to arts. And so that means investing in the next generation of artists so mm-hmm. that they can go into that economy.
How do you address the concern that I hear from a lot of people come to talk to me because they know I'm interested in it when I'm on tour, and there is a point of view that this needs to all come from the private sector and not from the public sector. And as a musician, I find it hard to make arguments of this nature. But my strong instinct is that if the federal government, state government, if government doesn't even symbolically support something that's such an important part of our economy, then how is the private sector supposed to kick in? But how can you arm me to speak to your average person about the importance of this?
Some issues are just too big for the private sector to take on or find mm-hmm. a profit in. They should always be a partner. And, you know, I'm not someone right. who demonizes the private sector. Right. I mean, their philanthropy in many ways helps fund arts. But I've been on an end gun violence tour in the last couple of weeks, making gun violence, ending gun violence a top priority in my campaign. And I've gone to cities like Chicago and Houston and Philadelphia. And I'll tell you, the private sector is not going there to invest in arts in a way that's going to be meaningful. They're not doing it in the schools. They're not doing it for, you know, aspiring young artists. It's right. just doesn't have, you know, the profit motivation that right. they would need. So it is a public responsibility to make sure that, you know, we can provide avenues for, you know, young artists starting in the classroom. And that issue is just too big, I think, for only relying on the private sector to solve
it. This may be inappropriate to ask you something so point blank, but 47 cents ahead is the index for the National Endowment for the Arts. That's the average person, 47 cents, right?
A year.
Yeah, we would like to see that be a dollar, which would still be less than the NEA started out with when you adjust for inflation. Would you be for that?
I would support that. And I'll tell you why, because that dollar spent by any taxpaying American is going to have a return right. on a better educated child, better paying jobs, you know, as the arts continue to grow. But also in what you can't measure. Mm. And that is just telling the story of our communities and who we are. I recently was able to grant a National Endowment for the Arts fellowship to a Castro Valley resident in my congressional district. A woman's name is Marion. And Marion makes quilts, these beautiful quilts that tell the story of the African-American struggle in the Bay Area and actually across the country. And so she has this just, you know, beautiful, you know, storytelling project woven into her quilts. And future generations will be able to look at that mm-hmm. as a way, you know, to honor and learn from and dishonor things that have happened in our history. And it's important, you know, that we enable that. And again, you can't measure that.
Let me play off of that a little bit too. And I think the National Endowment for the Arts is a fantastic program to kind of leverage. I think you said it, that sometimes the federal government or government steps in a little bit, and this leverages incredible capacity around communities, because sometimes they're small grants, or like you just described an example. As a president, if you're sitting in that office, how would you help kind of give direction or give thoughts to the National Endowment for the Arts and what they can be doing more of or less of? Or would you, or how would you see your role with the NEA?
You know, Senator, I really believe in, I guess using an industry term, mm-hmm. passing the mic.
Yeah.
When it's appropriate. And there's so many artists who benefited because they were exposed to art, or they had a mentor themselves or a program themselves, and they've gone on to either, you know, create jobs around them or have their own success story. And I think just highlighting who has benefited in the past and saying, imagine if we, instead of 47 cents, gave a dollar to the programs that helped these artists. Imagine what that could do to create even more opportunities, jobs, and stories that could be told. And I really believe in, you know, going back to art and the power of storytelling and having, you know, those individuals have their stories, you know, elevated, you know, from the bully pulpit of the presidency. But I think that's the best way to get everyday Americans to say, hey, I think this is a good investment for our country.
There's a big push, obviously, for education, and there's great studies being done by Brookings and others that indicate that if there is more cultural art, those kind of programs integrated into the educational system, less delinquency, better achievement scores, a variety of things. And data shows this. And yet we struggle, and this is one of the lowest years of public dollars in education for arts across the country. And so when it comes to STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, math, we like to call it STEAM and include art in there, because there's, and you gave a good example of just like a local guy, and that is about the idea of how you create engineers and artists together, and you can create a better end product for your community. Give us some of your thoughts in regards to STEM, or now what we like to say, STEAM funding, but also investment into early education and how that all plays into the value of arts within our culture and our communities.
I am a STEAM supporter, and I also just happen to think that's the direction our economy is going. You know, I tell my wife all the time, our two-year-old, he is going to have to, in this new economy, have the agility of skills that he is a surgeon, an engineer, God forbid, a lawyer, but also have, you know, a creative side to him, because the agility of skills that you need in this very changing economy is different than, you know, what you and I had to learn. And so I believe we want to create, we want to have a creator culture where Americans are always creating, whether it's digitally creating or whether it's what we can ultimately, you know, make and manufacture. And that means that you also need, you know, left brain, you know, stimulation. And so that's why we don't want to take those programs out of the classroom.
One of the big challenges that comes up is tax policy. And a lot of people see tax policy in different ways. We see it from the American for the Arts Action Fund that it's an idea that can also drive more people to participate in one way or another. And the tax policy in general is designed for those that are itemizing the deductions. They can take a benefit and give to the arts. But if you're not itemizing, you're not part of that equation. And data shows us that when given the opportunity for a tax benefit, more people do contribute in some way and therefore increases the giving power. Do you think tax policy, from your perspective, could have an impact, and can we make it in some ways more fair to the everyday person who's just working, not itemizing, but just, you know, doing their taxes and would love to give to the arts, but maybe they might give a little more if there's a tax incentive. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would like to see that, whether it's an additional box that you would check, an opportunity like that, or as you said, you know, a deduction that, you know, would incentivize, you know, that type of behavior. I mean, the tax code, as you know, is it's an opportunity to incentivize or disincentivize, and promoting the arts is one we'd want to incentivize. But I also see when it comes to funding infrastructure and housing, that there's opportunities, you know, to provide, you know, incentives, whether it's on a, you know, a national environmental, you know, review process, or whether it's on, you know, affordable housing projects, to incentivize hiring public artists, you know, to be a part of the project. I think that can go a long way, too.
I think that's very interesting. There's been a little talk, this comes up every once in a while, about possibly an artist corps, sort of a national service sort of vibe. I believe there was something, and I'm speaking without knowing enough about it, but I believe in 2008 we had something written into the platform that was about an artist corps of some kind, but I don't think that was ever tapped. So it's been, and I know it's been in the conversation for a while.
Well, I'll just tell you, I think Americans, by and large, we are very patriotic people. We want to serve our country, but most people are not going to sign up and devote themselves to, you know, 30 to 40 years, either in the military, where only 1% of Americans serve in, or even in federal service. But I've been working on an idea to have a cyber warriors reserve. So to take the best and brightest, you know, in computer science and have them, you know, also help defend the country against some of our cyber threats. You don't have to give up your job in the private sector, but people want to serve. And I think the same thing is true for artists. If there were opportunities for local artists to be a part of federally funded projects, you know, to provide public art, I think, you know, you would see people, you know, want to serve.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, it certainly creates a lot of interest in a town. If the architecture is beautiful, if the streets are beautiful, if there's something of interest, if you're a company that's thinking of moving into a town that could really use that business, you're looking at, is this an interesting and great place to bring employees and the business?
And I married a Hoosier from Southern Indiana who lives in a town just like that. It's called Columbus, Indiana. And the town was centered around the Cummins Engine Company. But through their philanthropy and then ultimately just public art and public architecture requirements, it is an architectural marvel in the world. I would encourage you to check it out. But it is very much in the mid-century modern design element. But it is because of that that people travel from all over the world to go there and see this real gem.
Yeah, I think people went, once you've got a roof over your head, your kids are safe, you got clean water, the next thing we kind of do is go where we're interested. And where we're interested, we spend money and we enjoy our lives, and it makes things better. So I certainly know a lot of people who are artists who would probably love to work off some of their student debt. If I could put in a word for that.
Put them to work.
Yeah. That you bring up an interesting thought there, and I just wonder, how do you view the arts in its broader sense in helping drive an economy, or is it an important part of the economy? You think about these jobs created, for example, the idea of a arts core. I know as a former mayor of a city, when you have an incredible thriving arts center, the amount of economic development around it expands incredibly. I mean, what's your general thoughts on some of that?
I think directly tying it to jobs, but as Ben said, you know, quality of life. And again, you can't measure quality of life. It's just, you know, it's either there or it's not. And the way I see it, and I know, Senator, you're in a rural area, you know, people love the outdoors in Alaska, and it not having art in, you know, a city and not having public art in a city would be like not having birds chirping, you know, in the woods. It would be noticeably absent, and you don't know it's gone. You don't appreciate how much it means until you don't hear it. And for art, I think, unless you go to a big city that doesn't value it and doesn't have it, or even a smaller community that doesn't have it and doesn't value it, it just feels empty or different. But I think you have to have that link to jobs and opportunity. And there's a case to be made. It's not even one that you have to invent with arts. I mean, the link is a very direct one.
We're getting close to the end, but I want to make sure we get this question in. So let's assume for a moment, Congressman, you have nothing to worry about. No economic issues. You don't have to worry about your family, everything. Who or what kind of artist would you want to be? And it can be even a group. But I'm curious, and again, remember, you don't have anything to worry about. You get
doesn't
to be
have to be
free,
a piano player.
I'd love to be in a country band.
A country band. Any instrument you'd want to play?
Probably, I'd want to play the guitar in a country band, sit on the back of a porch, drink a beer, and just, sing about the most simplest, but I think heartening and everyday American ideals.
Okay, there we go. It's appreciative, and I want to say this. You know, every time I ask someone that question, they always have a different, it's very interesting to see the answers that people have. But I can see they're sitting there with a beer, having a beer with you and a guitar playing. I'm not sure I would be any good than just drinking the beer.
We have to go with the three names. What's your middle name?
It's Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael Eric Swalwell or Eric Michael?
Eric Michael Swalwell. Yeah.
That's it. That's your country name.
There it is.
Instant.
There you go.
Instant.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking with us about this. This is important to us, obviously, and I'm glad to know it's important to you, too.
Of course. Thanks for, carrying the torch on this. And, let's just hope that the next president, can lead and really invest in the arts in a way that not only makes our town squares richer, but the next generation more imaginative.
I totally agree.
Thank you again, Congressman, for being here for the American for the Arts Action Fund, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe today to the Arts Vote 2020 podcast series with Ben Folds on Anchor or any of your favorite podcast apps. Please go to artsactionfund.org/podcast for more info. That's artsactionfund.org/podcast. You'll get more info.